Can you please state your name?
Georgiana Fisher.
Can you please spell that?
GeorgianaFisCher.
Do you go by Georgie?
Yes, I do.
And how old are you, Georgie?
I'm 21 years old.
And how old were you when this lawsuit was filed?
I was 17.
Do you have any siblings?
Yeah, I have a little brother.
How old is your little brother?
He's 18.
Do you have any pets?
Yeah, I have a dog and some chickens.
Have you testified in court before today, Georgie?
I have not.
And where do you live, Georgie?
I'm from Bozeman, Montana.
And are you currently in college?
Yeah, I go to the University of New Hampshire in Durham, New Hampshire.
Do you come back to Bozeman for school breaks when you can?
Yeah, I try to come back as often as possible.
And how long have you lived in Bozeman?
I've lived in Bozeman since 2010.
Do you have a long family history in Montana, Georgie?
I do. Yeah.
Were you named after one of your great-great-great-grandmothers?
Yeah, I was named after my great-great-great-great-grandmother, Georgiana Frances Ambler. She was the wife of the first minister of St. James Episcopal Church in Bozeman.
And is that church still in Bozeman today?
Yes, it is.
Georgie, I put two images on the screen. Do you recognize these photos?
Yes.
Can you please describe them?
These are two images of my great-grandmother, Mary Wisner Rennie. She went by Polly. In the image on the left, it's from 1926. She's the young lady on the right. That's her backpacking with her friend. And then in the image on the right, she's on the left this time, and she's standing with Ruth Breeden and her husband, Roland Rennie, at the name, you know, the Rick Breeden Fieldhouse, I believe, in Bozeman.
Is your great-grandma Polly someone you admire?
Yeah, she's definitely someone I look up to. She did a lot of work for conservation and protecting wilderness areas in Montana. She actually testified in front of Congress in support of the Lee Metcalf Wilderness Area in Montana.
Georgie, have you ever testified in front of a legislative body?
I have. Yeah.
Can you describe that experience?
Yeah, so it was to decide on the naming of the declaration of state soil for Montana. And so, yeah, this process was started by my fourth grade class at Longfellow Elementary. And we unfortunately did not get the bill all the way through by the time I left. But a different fourth grade class a few years later got that bill all the way through and designated the state soil. So I testified in support of that in front of the court. You're not a court, but
you testified in front of the legislature in support of the state soil?
Yes, I did.
Were you successful in your efforts?
Yeah, there is now an official state soil of Montana.
And what is it?
Scobie soil.
Do you think your great-grandma would have been proud of you?
I think so, yes.
What are you studying at the University of New Hampshire, Georgie?
I'm studying environmental science, and I'm minoring in geospatial analysis.
And what types of classes are you taking?
Yeah, the environmental science course at UNH covers like a wide variety of the different processes that affect the environment and different anthropogenic and natural influences on those processes, and also provides natural resources tools, I'd say, such as like forestry and remote sensing and just general lab skills.
Do you work in the lab sometimes yourself?
I do.
Why did you choose that major?
Growing up, I was privileged enough to spend a lot of time in this, beautiful outdoor world we have, and just I wanted to learn more about that world. And also, as I was experiencing the effects of climate change, I wanted to not only just learn more about the way the environment works, but also work to protect it.
Do you know what type of career you'd like to do when you're done with college?
I'm not entirely sure, but I'd like to go into the environmental science field, probably climate science, with a focus on geospatial analysis.
Georgie, I just put a slide up. Can you describe what we're looking at here?
Yeah, that is me cross-country skiing for my school in a race this past, I believe, February.
Georgie, are you a collegiate Nordic skier?
I am.
And can you describe kind of what that means?
Yeah, so cross-country skiing or Nordic skiing, it's kind of where you go both up and down the hills. Yeah, it's a very endurance-based sport that also needs a lot of strength as well. And yeah, that's basically it.
I think you might be understating what it involves. So would you say you're a competitive skier?
I am.
And how long have you skied competitively, Georgie?
I've skied competitively since I was in middle school.
So, Georgie, I put up another slide. Could you describe what we're seeing here?
Yeah, so that's competition, like my major ski competition history from 2016 until now, I guess. And, yeah, that just lists the dates, locations, and events, event type of all my major ski competitions so far.
And could you describe kind of the types of events you do?
Yeah, so in high school, which would be the first 4 years of this record, I would participate in junior national qualifiers. So that was ski races with other skiers under the age of 20 around our region, which is the Intermountain region, which includes Montana, Wyoming, Idaho, and Utah. Yeah, and so those junior national qualifiers would eventually qualify you potentially for junior nationals, which is the national competition for everyone under the age of 20. And so, yeah, I made it to junior nationals, four times. And then currently I participate in the Eastern Carnivals for the past 3 years of my collegiate career. And those are just races against all the other ski schools on the East Coast. So that's 11 other ski schools. And then in the process of that, you can qualify for the national competition, which is NCAAs.
And have you qualified for the NCAAs?
Yeah, I qualified and went to NCAAs my freshman year.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Georgie, about how many hours do you train every year?
Yeah, so I currently train about 500 hours a year. This list right here probably represents, given the shift in hours trained over the years, probably about 3,000 hours of training and racing.
And what time period does your typical race season encompass?
Yeah, the race season usually starts with some early season races in November, depending on the snowpack. And lasts until about mid-March, also depending on the snowpack.
And so I imagine you must train pretty much all the time.
Yeah, pretty much all the time, yeah.
Can you paint a picture for what that training involves?
Yeah, so I train pretty much year-round. Again, that like 500 hours a year currently. And that involves in the summers, running, biking and roller skiing and lifting, and then also skiing in the winter, obviously. And then, so that would be, I train between 15 and 22, I would say, hours a week. Usually 6 days a week, 6 days a week, eight times a week.
So sometimes you must put in more than one training session per day.
Yeah, sometimes we would have, say, like a lift session in the morning and then a run in the afternoon, for example.
Can you describe the two images I've placed on the screen?
Yeah, so the image on the left is me roller skiing in a race in Bozeman last July. And then the image on the right is me running in a race, which we typically do often for our training on the Beartooth Plateau in Montana.
Do you know the elevation of the Beartooth Plateau?
I believe it's about at least 10,000 feet.
And for those of us who aren't familiar with roller skiing, what is that?
Yeah, it's basically short skis on wheels. And then you also have a tip on the ends of your poles that you can see there specifically for pavement.
Do they have brakes?
They do not have brakes. A little scary sometimes.
Have you been here in Helena, Georgie, for the past 3 days for a trial?
Yes, I have.
Have you been able to get in any training while you've been in Helena?
Yeah, it hasn't quite been the same training, but I've luckily been able to get up, and I've run up Mount Helena and around the trails around there. It's really pretty up there.
Did you get a run in this morning?
I did.
Are you staying in Bozeman to train this summer, Georgie?
Unfortunately, after this trial, I'll be headed to
What will that be?
I'll be collecting data and analyzing summer chloride concentrations in the water. So, yeah, just concentrations from road salt application usually in the winters and how that affects the summer ecosystems.
Will you be training in Minneapolis as well?
Yeah, there's a good training group there.
Have you trained in the summers in Montana since you've been away at college?
Yeah, the past 3 summers I've trained in Bozeman.
Have you had any issues with wildfire smoke during those times?
Yeah, especially the summer of 2021, the smoke was pretty bad. I believe it started like early to mid-June, and then just lasted consistently throughout the whole summer.
Georgie, do you recognize this image that I placed on the screen?
Yeah, that's a text from my ski coach of the training group that I was training with, talking about how the smoke is bad out there, and they were switching to a easy distance inside. Usually our cutoff was about, I think, 150 AQI for air quality. If I can remember correctly, the air quality levels that day were well above that.
So your coach is concerned about you training outside on this day, obviously.
Yeah, just due to the danger to our lungs.
And did you train inside then?
Yes, we did.
And do you recall how that went?
Well, it was, it is not quite the same as the trainer. Yeah, it doesn't get you the same benefit. I mean, obviously you can't really roller ski that well inside. And you're in this kind of enclosed area, so you're not getting that fresh air like you would outside if there was no smoke. Yeah, it's also harder to motivate yourself inside. You can't get the same level of training.
Do you remember that day in particular, being inside and training, looking outside?
Yeah, I remember looking outside through these big windows that were on the front of the Access Fitness that we were in. And that was on 7th Avenue in Bozeman. And I remember looking across that street, and I could barely see the buildings on the other side of the street.
Do you recall whether in general, or actually I think you testified to this, that you recall 2021 being a pretty smoky summer? Is that true?
Yeah, it was, yeah, smoky the entire year. Actually, the training, or the entire summer, I mean, but the training group I was with, we had several kids from out of state, and they actually left halfway through the summer not all of them, but several of them actually left through halfway through the summer just because the smoke was too bad for them, and they did not return.
Do you anticipate you'll have team members come and train in Montana this summer in the future?
No, I didn't. Not as readily.
Why do you think that is?
The smoke is yeah, as you've heard, kind of harmful to our lungs, especially as competitive athletes. And I think, yeah, they are worried about the training quality that they would get here.
Georgie, how do you feel physically when you train in smoky conditions?
My lungs don't feel great. It feels harder to breathe. My eyes are itchy. My nose is kind of itchy. It just feels kind of enclosing and just generally bad.
Do you also struggle with seasonal allergies, Georgie?
I do.
Does it seem like your allergies are made worse by the smoke?
Yes.
And what are your symptoms, your allergy symptoms?
They're kind of similar to some cold symptoms. Like I get a runny nose or a stuffy nose and itchy eyes and nose and sneezing and some coughing.
So just now you mentioned that you have teammates who likely, you know, who'd be concerned about training here in Montana in the summer. Do you believe wildfire smoke has impacted your ability to train properly?
Absolutely. I mean, we've had to, as we've seen, train inside and just switch around training and cancel some training and, just generally, it just has generally impacted my training. And especially in the summer is really important to build a good base to get ready for competition season in the winter. And so every hour really counts in my sport. I've trained a lot of hours and those hours really add up. So it has affected my competition or my training and competition.
Going into a competition season, do you ever worry that your training limitations have impacted your ability to compete at a high level?
Yeah, I mean, I just, because of these missed or augmented days, I haven't been able to get that training quality, especially compared to, I ski on the East Coast and many of those skiers have not experienced these effects. And so they are better prepared for the ski season. So it can be intimidating starting the ski season knowing that I haven't fully prepared for it.
Georgie, in your experience, has there been enough snow on the ground in Montana to get your training in some years?
No, I've noticed that the snowpack has become increasingly variable, especially in the shoulder seasons.
I put an image up on the screen. Do you recognize this?
Yeah, this is an image my dad took of his group of young skiers that he was coaching. I believe it was January, I was also competing or also training at the same place. This is Lindley Park, where we have a ski area that we have in town in Bozeman.
And I guess not to state the obvious, but are these ideal ski conditions for training?
No, absolutely not.
Can you describe what it's like to try to train in conditions like this?
So, I mean, the snow is obviously not the best snow to train on, and having to ski over grass sometimes to accomplish your training is not the best training, I would say. Generally reduces the training quality.
Was this amount of snow in January in Bozeman unusual in your experience?
Yes, definitely. Unfortunately, it's becoming more usual, but this was definitely unusual.
Do you believe the reduced snowpack has also impacted your ability to train?
Yes, it has.
So I assume you don't only ski.
No, I don't only ski.
Do you enjoy other outdoor activities?
Yeah, I kind of enjoy most outdoor activities, hiking, running, trail running, backcountry skiing, downhill skiing, paddleboarding, river rafting,
And I put some images on the screen. Would you mind walking us through these? tell us what you're doing.
Yeah, so on the left is me in an inflatable kayak on a river. In the next to that is me backcountry skiing for an overnight backcountry skiing trip with my dad in the spring of 2020. And then next to that is me biking with my ski team members up Sourdough Canyon in Bozeman. And then finally on the right is me at a younger age atop Hardscrabble Peak in Bozeman.
And so Georgie also mentioned that you enjoy stuff like paddleboarding and rafting. Do you recognize this photo?
Yeah, that's me and my mom rowing the boat on the Smith River a couple years ago.
Do you remember this trip?
Yeah, it was definitely pretty rainy towards the start of the trip.
Was it cold?
A little bit, yeah.
Do you know if you need a permit to float the Smith River in Montana?
Yeah, it's a permit-only system, so you have to apply and get a permit in order to float.
And do you know if the Smith River is the only river in Montana that requires a permit?
I don't.
If I told you it was, would you agree with me?
I would agree, yeah.
In your experience, are these permits easy to get?
No, my family and family friends have, I think, applied every year for one, and we've only been able to draw them, I think, 3 years out of the many years we've been here.
And I'm just curious if this is your experience as it is for so many others. When you draw a Smith River permit, do you all of a sudden find that you have a lot more friends than you realized?
Yes.
Georgie, have you ever had to cancel or change plans to raft on Montana's rivers due to low stream flow conditions?
Yeah, in 2017, we had drawn a permit for the Smith River, I think for around the 4th of July weekend. And the water levels were so low that we ultimately had to cancel that trip.
Were you disappointed?
Yeah, floating the river, rafting the river with my family and our family friends is kind of a yearly event that's I really look forward to. And it's a great family time. And it was really unfortunate that we had to cancel that.
Georgie, have you been impacted by heat waves or unusually hot temperatures?
Yes, I have.
Can you describe that for us?
I remember a specific moment when I was training a few years ago in Bozeman on Kirk Hill. It was an interval day, so a slightly more intensive day. And it was very hot out. And I remember as I was going through the interval set, I started feeling very nauseous and lightheaded and dizzy. And I just had to sit down and stop and end my workout earlier, really.
Is it hard to train when it's really hot out?
Yeah, it is. We had to restrict the amount of water we used in the time of day we watered on my, in our lawn and on our garden. And so that impacted the fresh fruits and vegetables that we get from our garden.
Georgie, do you think that your mental health has suffered due to these climate-related impacts?
Yeah, absolutely. Specifically with skiing, the future of my sport kind of hangs in this balance as these winters change. And it's difficult to think about the fact that my sport is a dying sport and it may not exist or at least at the very least be dramatically changed in the future as these snowpacks change and diminish and reduce in quality. Yeah, so that definitely has an impact to my mental health because I rely on the sport for exercise and happiness, or just, yeah, just to improve my happiness and then just improve my general quality of life. And then on top of that, just seeing these natural places that I really love, be impacted by these changes, it does make me stressed and scared and a little bit, hopeless for the future at times, as well as scared for the future of people who rely, including myself, I guess, on these natural resources for both their health and happiness and livelihoods.
Yeah.
Roji, as a young person with the knowledge that climate change is occurring, how does that feel to you?
It's rough. Looking towards my future and not knowing how these places will change, or knowing that they will change, but not knowing what that future will really look like. And it's hard to think about the changes that I'm going to see to these places that I love and people that I love and just, yeah.
Bridget, have you sought out professional help concerning these impacts to your mental health about your worries?
I have.
Georgie, can you tell me what you think the defendants in this lawsuit are doing to cause and contribute to climate change and your injuries?
Yeah, I believe that through the continued support of fossil fuels and the continued ignoring of climate change when considering those projects, the defendants are not... the state is just not protecting its residents and especially its young residents who will have to face dramatic changes in their lifetime. And I believe that is their job to protect us as citizens and residents of the state. Through the continued support of fossil fuels there. Not protecting our environment and our constitutional rights and just our health in general.
Georgie, as a scientist yourself, do you think it makes sense to ignore climate impacts that we've heard about this week so far when doing environmental reviews for projects?
No, from what I've seen, the science on this is clear. It is clear that these changes are happening and will continue to happen because of anthropogenic climate change. I don't think it's right to ignore them at all because they do have a significant effect on our environment.
What do you think would happen if you won this lawsuit?
It would definitely give me some hope and definitely make me feel like the state is doing its job in protecting the well-being, health, and safety of its residents and the people that it is meant to protect. And it would be, I would say, a step in the right direction in terms of these impacts that we're seeing.
Georgie, I have just one last question. I see you're wearing a couple of pins on your jacket today. Can you please explain the significance of those pins?
Yeah, so this pin here is a pin from my great-grandfather, Roland Rennie's campaign for governor. So it says Rennie in Montana, in the state of Montana. And this pin on the other side is from my great-grandmother, Polly Rennie. And so I'm, yeah, just trying to wear these pins, to kind of carry them with me and, promote the legacy of the Rennie family.
I think they'd be really proud of you.
I hope so. I think so.
Thank you, Georgie. I have no further questions.
Thank you.
Real quick, and it's an off-the-wall question. Has Jesse Diggins' success changed women's Nordic ski? I have to ask. I'm a big fan.
Yeah, she definitely has. She's done a lot to, both, I guess, promote Nordic skiing, and also she's been able to have success at a really high level in Nordic skiing, and it's definitely, she's definitely kind of marked the improvement of along with Keegan Randall, and I'm not sure if you were, but,
just in case the judge doesn't know who Jesse Diggins is, would you please tell her?
Yeah, she's a cross-country skier from, Minnesota, and she won Olympic gold with, Keegan Randall in the Olympics, and then also in the most recent Olympics, won silver, and has also achieved a number of successes across an international stage.
I hope you get to meet her.
Yeah, I have met her in Bozeman, actually.
You did get to meet her?
Yeah.
I bet that was special.
It definitely was.
Thank you. I have no further questions.
Thank you.
Thank you. You may step down.
Thank you, Your Honor.